Please be seated. There has got to be some sort of cosmic karma that on all the Sundays that I find myself standing up here, that the first lesson is extolling the virtues of a capable wife. I was heartened a little bit by the fact that all week while I was in Nanaimo facilitating dismantling racism, that most of my clergy friends were having the same conundrum. One of my dear friends, also clergy and a part of the LGBT community, said to me, she was steering clear of that lesson because, as she put it, between her and her wife, they don't have one capable wife. I'm also relieved because even the commentaries I've read on this particular reading are more like suggestions of what not to say when you get up here. One scholar described this portrait as about as realistic as Snow White. Preaching on this text, it would be best to follow the direction of the text itself, moving from speaking about the good wife, which is verses 10 to 28 and 30 and 31, to speaking to her. She fears and praises the Lord, and her works and her husband praise her. What could be better? Wise to leave it at that. I will, however, look ahead in the schedule from now on, because if anything comes up about a capable husband, I don't want mine to be here when I'm talking. So both the epistle and the gospel this week speak to me in a very, very profound way. As most of you know, when I come here, I preach on what I've experienced. And let me tell you, this week I've had some experience. I spent the week in Nanaimo facilitating, and I'm careful to say facilitating and not teaching, dismantling racism to about 20 people. And dismantling racism is a very, very difficult subject to talk about. Why? Well, because simply it's not something we can do quickly or overnight. We've been submerged in training about people who just didn't get it, and I couldn't help but notice Jesus dropped a bomb on the disciples and they didn't know what to do, so they just didn't say anything. Instead, they spent their time arguing about who among them was the greatest. He who sat down called the 12 and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last and servant of all." While being submerged in this training about people who just didn't get it, I wondered about an entire race of people who somewhere along the way decided that they were the first among God's people and set about setting up a system of government and a church that perpetuated that myth. Now, before anybody gets angry and erects a post in the back and starts collecting firewood, let me tell you, I'm not condemning every white settler who came to North America. But those who came to North America set up a system, both in government and in church, that perpetuated that myth of superiority. And as a matter of fact, set up a system, the very system they tried to get away from, to have that new and better life. The systemic and institutional racism that has existed and still exists, the system that was once put in place to ensure that one group of people would remain first, still exists. One of the most difficult and heart-wrenching exercises we do in this is called the history timeline, the wall of history, we call it. And so along the wall, we put up a big chart from the 1700s through to the 21st century. And on this wall, we take little snippets of paper, little facts about history, and glue them up according to were they racism or were they resistance to racism. I was shocked the very first time I did it. I was moved and shocked. I believe even the rector told me when he did it the first time, was very shocked. For example, in the 1960s, the decade that I was born, people of color couldn't rent a hotel room in most provinces in this country. It wasn't until the mid to late 60s that the Fair Accommodations Act were passed in most provinces in Canada. In 1903, they had what was called the Direct Passage Act for immigration to Canada. Now, those of you who know, in 1903, there were no jet planes to get us anywhere. So direct passage meant that you had to enter Canada from your country of origin by direct passage. Now we know that in those days there was no way you could get from Asia or India or the South Pacific to Canada without stopping somewhere else first. So where could you come to Canada from in the early 1900s by direct passage? We all know. Well, two places, the United States, if we want to count that, or Europe. That was very difficult for me to take. The system still exists, as I keep saying, the system still exists. For example, the Indian Act still exists. I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to regale you with what happened to with the residential schools here. We're all well aware of that. But the racism that existed in Canada and still exists is real. I heard an amazing quote from the bishop when he arrived on Friday to celebrate Eucharist with us. Whether or not history will agree, the opinion of most of us who have lived through it runs not to the contrary, but that this year has supplied us a wilderness of problems and perplexities, questions of debt payments, of reparations, of disarmament, of falling exchanges, of rising tariffs, of world trade and home industries, of increasing taxes and decreasing incomes, of unemployment and want, while great food supplies are wasting. And the suggested solutions, how confused and confusing they are also, the authorities are invariably divided. In the midst of this turmoil, we ask with such seriousness today, what contribution can the Church of Christ make in such circumstances? That quote sounds like the reflection of a person of faith trying to not to be overwhelmed by what's happening outside our doors today. So you can imagine, we were all shocked to find out that quote was part of the bishop's charge at the close of the Diocese of British Columbia Synod in 1931. Most of us left this week's dismantling racism feeling charged and overwhelmed in equal parts. Charged at the need and desire to effect change in the system and the minds of those who have continually worked to remain first among God's people, by the passion stirred in us to see these changes through. At the same time, overwhelmed by the magnitude of this task. How can anyone change a system that has been in place for hundreds of years, both in the church and in the state? Whether it would be the issue of racism, which I spent my week on, or the world issues, which Bishop Schofield brought up in 1931, much the same issues that we faced here in 2018. I know that I cannot single-handedly change a system that's been in place for so many years. And in the face of it, I may never see the end of racism in my lifetime. But this is where my personal philosophy for my ministry kicks in. If in one workshop or one training session, I can open the eyes of one person who simply could not accept these systems and issues that are still around today, then I have made a difference. One soul at a time, one person at a time, one can make a difference. As Alistair alluded to earlier, this week we have our diocesan synod, and there's a bit of comfort in knowing that we will continue as a church to stumble, to do the right thing, to believe that in order to be the first, we must be the last and the servant of all. I ask your prayers for those of us who will be meeting next week to discuss, no doubt, debate, and hopefully open the voice to the Holy Spirit and listen as our diocese charts a new future. We wish to be the servants of all. May it be so. Thanks be to God.